It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. As soon as the clocks change each fall, do you feel like your body goes into hibernation mode? When winter mood shifts bring us to the point of depression, the experience is called seasonal affective disorder, also known as SAD. And the mental health effects can be devastating for some people. Catherine Rockline, assistant professor in the University of Pittsburgh Department of Psychology and Center for the Neural Basis of Cognition at Pitt and CMU, studies and treats SAD. She's here to help us get a better understanding of the disorder. Catherine Rockline, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you.
Does winter send you into a depression? Are you someone with seasonal affective disorder? Have you been dealing mentally with these dark, cold, snowy days of winter? How have you been dealing with them? And you can join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Our email address is essspgh@wesa.fm. And you can reach us on Twitter at essspgh and follow the conversation at #EPLive. How have you been dealing mentally with these dark, cold, snowy days of this long winter? Again, the number, 412-246-2002. Catherine Rockline, can weather influence mental behavioral health? What are some of the ways seasonal affective disorder can disrupt someone's lifestyle?
Well, for those who are vulnerable to SAD, it's actually the shorter days in winter rather than the weather per se that we find has an effect on mental health. And some of the changes that we see are exactly the same we see in non-seasonal depression. So we see depressed mood, a loss of interest in normally interesting activities. People find they're less interested in socializing. They may have feelings of guilt or worthlessness, and we see changes in sleep and eating.
And what has your research told you so far?
Well, my research is focusing on a gene called the melanopsin gene, which we have found increases one's risk of SAD. We've also found that a small number of the cells in our retina that contain melanopsin seem to be less responsive in winter with SAD. This suggests that the melanopsin gene might increase your chances of having SAD by making these cells less responsive. And because these melanopsin cells are involved in keeping our circadian rhythm synchronized with the world, this gene could explain the problems in circadian rhythms that we see in SAD.
What do you or why do you find it necessary to study seasonal affective disorder rather than depression that occurs any other time of year?
Well, I actually think we're studying both at the same time. Although only about 20% of those with depression may have a purely seasonal pattern, many people with so-called non-seasonal depression still find that their depression is worse in winter. So our research on SAD could help those individuals too. But one thing to think about is that because we can predict when SAD will occur in the fall or winter and when it will remit in spring, we might have a better chance of identifying the factors or the neural mechanisms that lead to the onset of depression and the factors controlling remission or recovery from an episode of depression.
There are some people who say that this condition does not exist. Does your research prove them wrong once and for all?
Well, no. I would say that I guess I would ask a person who thought that SAD didn't exist if they thought depression didn't exist. Individuals with SAD pretty much have the same types of symptoms, the same severity, and the same clinical distress that those with non-seasonal depression experience. They're the same criteria. So we even see similar levels of suicidal ideation.
Again, our number is 412-246-2002, 412-246-2002. We'd love to have you share your experience with us regarding seasonal affective disorder or just whether you've been diagnosed with it or not. If when the days get shorter in November, the weather gets colder, do you find yourself with less energy? Do you find yourself mentally down at all or mentally down measurably as compared with how you feel at other times of the year? 412-246-2002 is the number to call to join the conversation with Catherine Rockline, assistant professor in the University of Pittsburgh Department of Psychology. And Catherine, could you describe some of the specific things that you're doing to understand what triggers this and what the potential treatments for it might be?
Well, we're really interested in understanding the neural pathway by which our circadian rhythms, you know, our daily patterns in mood, energy, alertness, and sleep and so forth are synchronized with the rest of the world. It's the neural pathway from the retina in our eyes to the circadian clock in the brain that allows us to remain synchronized with the outside world. And we're using a measure of this neural pathway that's non-invasive, meaning it's actually observable. It is reflected in the way the pupil constricts in response to light. So by just looking at people's pupil constrictions, we can actually get an idea of how well this neural pathway for circadian rhythms is working.
412-246-2002. Let's go to Liz in Pittsburgh, who has a very interesting question. Liz, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you, Paul. I was just calling because you guys are talking about SAD and people who suffer from seasonal depression in the wintertime, but I actually get a lot more depressed in the summertime, and I was wondering if your guests had heard of that before and if they know of anyone else who suffers like that.
Well, that is a great question, Liz. Catherine, what about people who suffer seasonal affective disorder in the summertime?
Yes, we call this summer seasonal affective disorder, and we have heard about it. It certainly doesn't seem to be as common as the winter pattern, especially at northern latitudes north of Pittsburgh, but we believe it's more and more common the further south you go, and it may actually have to do with the fact that because of high summer heat or humidity, our activities might be somewhat limited, more so than in spring and fall or spring and winter.
I was in Winnipeg one year, and it was in the late summer, and people up there was there were a group of people who were celebrating the coming of the fall and setting the clocks back and the darker days. They found this. They were part of a society. I can't remember the name of it, but they were celebrating the longer nights. Have you heard of anything like this? Where people actually enjoy this time of year more than others?
Well, what I have heard about is at very northern latitudes when there's sun almost all day long, or for all but maybe 1 hour or two a day, that can be really disruptive. Sometimes it can trigger manic episodes in vulnerable individuals, and it can be disruptive of sleep for those who are less affected but still somewhat affected. So I can see how if you're someone who finds light for 22 hours a day unpleasant, that yes, you would be welcoming a little bit more of a balance.
Let's go to Denise in Butler. Denise, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you.
I think you might fall under the heading of the group I just described.
You know what? I had the radio turned down. Sorry, because I thought it would interfere with the call, I didn't hear what you just said.
Well, there are some folks really enjoy this time of year. They're not adversely affected by it at all. Are you one of those?
I definitely am, and all my kids and my husband were all happen to be the same way.
So what do you love about this time of year? What makes you happy? What makes you embrace it?
I think just that we're all very active and healthy and fit, but it's kind of nice once this great time comes. It kind of relieves any pressure, like you have to go outside and do things and be energetic, and it gives you the excuse just to stay in and be cozy and watch TV and kind of slug around for a bit.
Well, Catherine, have you heard of anything like this?
Well, actually, this is really great. First of all, I'm glad you're not in the group of people suffering from SAD. That's nothing I wish on anyone. And some of the things you're describing remind me of some of the treatment approaches to seasonal affective disorder. In cognitive behavioral therapy for SAD, we might do both of the things you describe. One is encourage people to be healthily active in the winter, but also encourage people to consider different types of activities. It's true, you don't have to go outside during winter to remain active, but you might turn to enjoyable activities that are more conducive in the cold weather, staying inside, more movies, books, social activities, mm-hmm. that kind of thing.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, and when there is a sunny day, I definitely feel suddenly energized, and then I'm ready to go out and go for a run or whatever. But we all really do enjoy just kind of the downtime as well. So I just wanted to... Everybody's always complaining about the clouds and the long winters, and not everyone feels that way. We love it.
Well, Denise?
No, I think it's actually most common that we will experience some changes in the seasons, maybe a change in not wanting salads as much and wanting more mm-hmm. comfort foods or being a little less energetic, or maybe spring fever in the spring, having a little bit more energy. You know, when we talk about SAD, we're actually talking about the very, very most extreme end of the distribution or the continuum. Individuals who, unfortunately, experience a clinical depression in the winter.
Well, Denise,
thank you.
Thank you for your interesting perspective on all of this. And we were asking for people to share what it's like to suffer from seasonal affective disorder. And we have Sam calling in from Aspinwall to share his insights with us. Sam, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hi. I had a regular sort of depression about 10 years ago. And that wasn't like seasonal affective, at least what I experienced as seasonal affective, sort of the winter depression. It wasn't like that at all, so I don't know who says that it doesn't exist, but I can definitely attest to it existing. And here's what I think it does it for me. It's not the cold weather, it's the darkness. The days are very short, so I find myself going to work in the dark, and I find myself coming home in the dark.
Yeah.
And I just get a general feeling of just wanting to hibernate. And
your
here's what I found.
Your experience of the day length being more of a problem than the weather is pretty consistent with some research that my colleague Mike Young did. He compared things like the amount of sunshine, rainfall, cloud cover, daily solar radiation, and found that the time of day, so the time from dawn to dusk or photo period, was the most important factor.
Yeah, so here's my sort of how I self-treat it. One is I take every opportunity to get out in the sun. Okay, on a sunny Saturday, my wife and I try to go for walks. We try to, like last Saturday, went out, had lunch at that little Frick restaurant, which is all windows. You see all this bright light comes in. So in other words, to get a lot of light. The other thing is just try and stay active, because I've got a real tendency to want to just sort of, you know, slow down to a stop. And people eat a lot of comfort food in the winter, and my experience with people call comfort food is food with a lot of carbohydrates.
Yeah.
And I try to avoid that and try to have more protein and less carbohydrates, because the carbohydrates kind of slow you down. And that sort of works for me.
Hmm.
You know, when I'm vigilant about it, you know, is to just try and be active, try and get to the gym or try and get outside and walk, try and get as much sunlight as you can. And stay away from, you know, mashed potatoes and pasta and all the stuff that sort of, you know, makes you, you know, it's slows down your system.
Sure. That's an interesting perspective. And it goes along, I think, with what Denise was saying, that she said it can be an excuse for staying indoors and watching TV and just being lazy. It is also an excuse, and some of us are more guilty of this than others, of indulging in those so-called comfort foods. So
right, or, you know, like sitting and staring at the fire with a glass of wine. Well, staring at the fire is nice, but you have too many glasses of wine. Wine is a depressant.
Yep.
You know? So it's like you have to just be conscious of it. It doesn't mean you have to completely abstain from having a glass of wine. At least this is how I feel about it.
Sure. Well,
just be aware that drinking a lot of wine is a depressant, and you're already sort of depressed because of the season. So.
Well, Sam, good luck with getting through the rest of this winter, and thanks for calling in.
Bye.
Let's go to Bill in Banksville, who wants to comment on something that refers to how potentially to treat seasonal affective disorder.
November 7th, it gets much worse.
Bill, I'm sorry, let me jump in. Bill from Banksville, if you could, we kind of missed the beginning of what you said. If you could start over again for us, please.
Okay. I have problems with depression anyways, and I have a psychiatrist. And with his permission, I use light therapy, and it really helps. And on or about November 7th, I start using it. Of course, it's much better to get out and see the real sun. And even when it was minus 5, I get out with this walking group, for instance, on Wednesday with 60 and 70-year-olds and get out in the real sun. And that helps a lot.
Well, let me jump in and ask Catherine, what about light therapy for treating SAD? Is it effective?
Absolutely, and this is fantastic. It's really great to hear from a caller who is having success with treating this disorder. Basically, light therapy is what we call the first line of treatment for SAD. It's our gold standard, and it has the most evidence for being effective in seasonal affective disorder.
Well, Bill. So either way, whether it's artificial or natural sunlight, you say that's the thing that works for you.
Yes, I give a plug for getting out in the real sunlight and not to test the cold yourself and not listen to these wind chill scares that they like on Tuesday. They kept talking about the wind chill, and actually around here there was no wind.
So Bill, you're saying don't be afraid to go outside in the wintertime. Thank you
very much.
We appreciate that. Let's take one last call here from Srihari in Squirrel Hill. Srihari, I hope I'm saying your name correctly. Welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you.
Go ahead with your comment or question for Catherine Rockline.
So, Catherine, very interesting topic. Thank you. Mm-hmm. What of people who suffer from SAD and who travel across continents? So maybe someone from the United States goes to Australia during winter, and would they still continue to experience SAD?
So you're asking if someone travels from, say, winter to a place that's having summer?
Mm-hmm.
In that case, we would expect actually the disorder to remit. So a person traveling to the southern hemisphere or to an area of the world that's currently in spring or summer, they're going to have longer day lengths, so a longer day from dawn to dusk. And we would expect and hope that the disorder would remit. And in some ways, that's kind of the idea behind light therapy. Some have spoken about it as a way of sort of simulating other seasons, so simulating earlier dawns in spring and summer, and that might be part of why it's effective.
So I'm a psychiatrist, and in terms of the underlying neural spinnings between depression and SAD, how would one explain this or utilize this perhaps to treat depression? Is there any potential pathways, common pathways and similarities that one could use to treat depression?
Absolutely. You're probably, being a psychiatrist, you're probably familiar with some of the changes in circadian rhythm seen in all types of depression or non-seasonal depression. So changes in sleep patterns and periods of activity. And there's actually some evidence. There was recently a meta-analysis showing that light therapy for non-seasonal depression was actually effective. So although it's probably not going to be the first line of treatment for non-seasonal depression, the effect of light therapy for non-seasonal depression suggests that some of the same etiological mechanisms, specifically neural mechanisms, are at play in both disorders.
Srihari, thank you very much for your phone call, and it certainly has been an interesting conversation. I want to thank our guest, Catherine Rockline, assistant professor in the University of Pittsburgh Department of Psychology and Center for the Neural Basis of Cognition at Pitt and CMU. She studies and treats seasonal affective disorder. Catherine Rockline, thank you so much for being with us on Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks, and thanks a lot for highlighting this important disorder.
It was our pleasure. Coming up, Bob Dvorak on the first cold weather Super Bowl. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.